Anyway.
Any hoodle.
Any hoodle. Yeah, I can read the synopsis of it. I've got it pulled up here.
Is it long?
Ish. I mean, what do you expect? Movie's fucking 2 hours long.
I mean, we could also just be like, a lot of bullshit happens and then it ends. Okay.
Can I just briefly pause?
Yeah.
Did Subaru put a paid partnership into Roku City?
I am sure they did, because this does happen. You see actual models of cars and shit in this now. It's really annoying. I miss the old Roku City before it became so gentrified.
To real Roku City. We can see the off-white.
Yeah. I'll
get it. Real Roku City is like real America.
I was so distracted by it. I was like, fantasy.
Right. It's because it's also like jarringly realistic.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah, it's weird. I don't care.
Another episode of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down with a troubled movie, a themed cocktail, and then talk about what worked, what didn't, and how they would fix it. I'm Chris, but I'm a friar, Ravel.
I am Lee, too bad, so sad, Delahanty.
And I am Brendan Tits Forward Drischler.
And all of these nicknames together can only mean we watched one movie.
That's right.
And that was 2004's Van Helsing, directed by Stephen Sommers, starring, I'm going to see if I can get this,
yep.
Hugh Jackman. Kate Beckinsale. David Wenham.
Yes. Richard Roxburgh.
Richard Roxburgh.
Shuler Hensley.
I'm going to fall off after this point.
Kevin J. O'Connor is Igor. That's mostly
kinda it.
Yeah, like, those are the big ones. They're obviously, like, Will Kemp, fucking hot werewolf prince.
Yeah.
According to his Wikipedia page, one of his stage names, James Dean of Ballet.
What?
I'm sure Will Kemp himself wrote that.
That's incredible. Or his agent, right? Yeah. So this was a very early 2000s CGI schlock fest. This is maybe, not to, like, set the bar too high, but I think this may be one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen.
I think I'd agree.
It's very bad.
It is.
But before we get into all the reasons why it's so bad, what did we drink?
The drink we made for this episode is The Brighter Side of Death. It was 3 ounces of Aperol, 3 ounces of Prosecco, an ounce of sparkling water, 4 strawberries and bitters, which I realize we forgot. So omit those bitters.
Yeah, that was actually... we'll get to it.
Yeah. You cut the tops of the strawberries and slice them into small pieces. Add it to a shaker with Aperol and muddle. Add some ice and shake until mixed. Strain the mixture into a cocktail glass over ice. Add Prosecco and sparkling water. Then stir it gently and garnish with a straw. And you've got The Brighter Side of Death.
What did we think?
I like Aperol.
What did we think? I like Aperol.
I love Recess.
I love Aperol.
Amazing.
Oh, God. That movie's so good.
We were so wavelengthed up.
I was Aperol over it.
I also love Aperol. I like strawberries as a fruit. When it comes to it appearing in drinks or food, my fear is that it'll come out too sweet, but I actually thought... it was so nicely balanced with the Aperol. It went down real easy.
I don't understand this complaint, because, like, strawberry, like, syrup, very sweet.
Yeah.
Strawberries on their own.
Right.
Not
real,
that sweet.
Real strawberries good. Anything flavored strawberries usually
it's
bad.
It's because they add a whole shitload of sugar.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is that, but also, like, I think sometimes it's just fake, you know?
Yeah.
Like, anytime it's a fake strawberry, it just tastes like medicine.
But, like,
and I
strawberry
hate
sauce, like, you might have.
Right. If you at a good restaurant.
Shortcake,
yes,
is very good.
Yes. But that's also just probably just like a reduction.
Right.
Yeah,
so like
that,
that's always
that
good.
That is sugar.
Right.
You have to add sugar to that,
right,
or it won't taste good.
Right.
It will just taste like...
I guess it's just like not too much sugar,
strawberries,
please.
But I'm a huge strawberry person. Anyway, this was a good drink.
Yeah.
I think it may have been the first drink that I finished all of recently.
Oh, good job.
Well, thanks. I don't need a validation from a man.
Yes, you do. Who are we kidding,
if
honey?
If there's any lesson we took from Van Helsing, it's that... We all need
yes,
validation.
As long as you're wearing a corset and tight pants, you don't need the validation of any
and
man.
High-heeled boots.
Yep.
Everything supported but the boobs.
Yeah.
Let those girls hang out.
She is tits forward.
Such a
at
good
the
point.
End, so at the end, when she has just bounced off that castle top and is lying there prone, she's wearing something covering her boobs that is almost the same color as her skin, except for like these little red stripes. And I was really like, are her nips bleeding? Like when I saw her in the ranch, like it looks like her
I
nips are just bleeding.
I think what you might be saying is there's this weird little like partial blouse that is...
Yeah.
Because it's not only that there's a corset, right. There's then this, like, bustier-style jacket. This is what Kate Beckinsale is wearing. And there's, like, this red leather kind of bustier jacket thing. And then it's, like, a strip of, like, frilly white,
right.
Semi-translucent fabric.
Right.
And I think it's supposed to imply that there's, like, a larger blouse
underneath
there,
it, yeah.
But there can't be because it does look
corset.
Like it's just, like, corset
yeah.
skin.
Yeah.
Can you envision this, listener? Can you envision what Kate Beckinsale must look like
she
in this
She never takes
picture?
It off, aside no. from when she gets kidnapped, I guess.
Think about it. Think about it.
Wait, why are you creeping? Why are you being so creepy?
This is my new NPR style voice. I'm doing my NPR podcast about Kate Beckinsale. Turns out she had a very tits forward role in the movie Van Helsing
like
from
80% 2000.
It turns out she had a very tits forward.
Maybe we should all do that someday. If we ever do any kind of movie that has anything to do with like NPR.
Well, if we do like a mumblecore movie.
Yeah, that's true.
I actually thought that there was not enough coffee.
I thought there
movie.
Was not enough mumbling. I could understand what people were saying much of the time without the aid of subtitles.
I wouldn't have to do anything to my voice.
Yes.
It would honestly be the biggest labor for me.
Anywho.
Before we get into any more of the details, can we just, I guess, go through, what is Wikipedia telling us this movie is about?
Blah!
Oh, jeez.
In 1887, Transylvania, Dr. Victor Frankenstein, aided by his assistant Igor and Count Dracula, creates a monster! Dracula kills Frankenstein when he refuses to go along with the vampire's designs for the creature, as Igor, revealed to be under Dracula's pay, watches impassively. What a dick. As a mob storms the castle, that was in there, actually, that wasn't me editorializing.
Oh.
As a mob stores a castle, the monster flees to a windmill with Frankenstein's body. The mob burns down the windmill, seemingly killing the monster. A year later, the monster hunter Gabriel Van Helsing travels to Notre Dame de Paris and kills Dr. Jekyll after a brawl with Mr. Hyde. Van Helsing works for Knights of the Holy Order, whose mission is to protect mankind. Van Helsing, who remembers nothing before he was found on the steps of a church nearly dead, hopes to earn pardon for his forgotten sins and regain his memory. So he can't remember anything, but he knows he must have sins that he's forgotten. But he has no proof of it. This is a stupid movie.
It's also just, it's such a dumb digression that goes
yes.
nowhere.
At the Order's Vatican City headquarters, Van Helsing is tasked with traveling to Transylvania, destroying Dracula and protecting Anna and Velkin Valerius, the last of an ancient Romanian family. Their ancestor vowed that his descendants would kill Dracula or spend eternity in purgatory. Dumb promise. In Transylvania, Anna and Velkin attempt to kill a werewolf controlled by Dracula, but it falls with Velkin into a gorge, biting him as Velkin shoots it with a silver bullet. Van Helsing and his friar friend Carl, a weapons inventor, arrive at a village and join Anna's fight with Dracula's brides, Verona, Mariska, and Alira, slaying Mariska in the process. That night, Velkin visits Anna to warn her of Dracula's plans, but transforms into a werewolf and escapes. Van Helsing and Anna pursue Velkin to Frankenstein's castle. They stumble upon Dracula's plan to duplicate Frankenstein's experiments to give life to thousands of his undead children, using Velkin as a conduit. During the fray, Dracula confronts Van Helsing, whom he regards as an ancient rival. Dracula's spawn comes to life before dying due to lacking Frankenstein's original formula. Van Helsing and Anna escape, and at the windmill, stumble upon Frankenstein's monster, who reveal that he is the key to Frankenstein's machine giving life to Dracula's blood. Eavesdropping on their discussion, Velkin escapes with this new information. While attempting to bring the monster to Rome, Van Helsing and his crew are ambushed by the brides and Velkin near Budapest. Verona and Velkin are killed, but Van Helsing is bitten by the latter. Alira kidnaps Anna and offers to trade her for the monster at a masquerade ball. Van Helsing locks the monster in a crypt, but Dracula's allies retrieve him. Van Helsing and Carl rescue Anna and escape from the masquerade guest revealed to be vampires! At Anna's castle, Carl explains that Dracula is the son of Valerius the Elder. When he was killed in 1462 by the left hand of God, Dracula made a pact with the devil and lived again. Valerius was told to kill Dracula and gain salvation for his entire family. Unable to kill his son, he imprisoned him in an icy fortress. A fragment, which the cardinal gave to Van Helsing back in Vatican City, opens a path to Dracula's castle. They find the monster, who reveals that Dracula possesses a cure for lycanthropy, because only a werewolf can kill him. Why not? Van Helsing, fighting the curse, sends Anna and Carl to retrieve the cure, killing Igor in the process. Van Helsing attempts to free the monster, but is struck by lightning, bringing Dracula's children to life. Dracula and Van Helsing turn into their bestial forms in battle, while Frankenstein's monster helps Anna escape Alira. Anna then kills Alira with the help of Carl, whilst both return to their human forms. Dracula reveals that it was Van Helsing who killed him and offers to restore his memory. Van Helsing refuses and kills Dracula after reverting back to his werewolf form, triggering his brood's deaths. Anna injects the cure into Van Helsing, but is killed by him in the process. Van Helsing and Carl cremate Anna's body on a cliff overlooking the sea. Frankenstein's monster leaves town, and Van Helsing sees Anna's spirit reuniting with her family in heaven. Van Helsing and Carl ride off into the sunset.
Oh, man.
That felt like 2 hours and 11 minutes.
I feel like the speed at which you had to read that to make it go by quickly was the speed this movie needed to be moving
That's
at.
That's right. That's something this movie could have used more of. Pacing.
Pacing.
Real quick, cast. Hugh Jackman is Gabriel Van Helsing. Kate Beckinsale is Anna Valerius. Richard Roxburgh is Count Dracula. David Wenham is Carl. Shuler Hensley is Frankenstein's monster. Kevin J. O'Connor is Igor. And again, like, we're trailing off here. Will Kemp is Velkin Valerius. And then it's just like, the brides. That creepy Undertaker guy.
Yeah.
Robbie Coltrane is the voice of Mr. Hyde, apparently.
In the very beginning.
In the very beginning. Whenever you see him in the beginning, you see Van Helsing in Paris, and you see him, like, looking at Notre Dame. And I was like, oh, shit, is he going to kick Quasimodo's ass? Like, is the opening of this movie going to be like, fuck you, man. Yeah. You have a physical deformity. You're not fit to live in this world.
It would be very funny if that was the case, though, just because it would have been, like, all of these monsters. And then Quasimodo, who's not...
Right, I love that also. It's like, you're lopping in, like, Quasimodo and the Phantom of the Opera, who are just, like, people who have disabilities.
Right.
Why is Mr. Hyde there?
I have no idea. So, well, okay, Ellie, you want to know the real fun thing? Universal made an animated prologue to this movie that was released to DVD called like, The London Assignment. So if you really want to know why Mr. Hyde is there, we can find track down this DVD.
Allegedly, it's also supposed to get more into, like, Dracula in London as well. I haven't seen it.
How does Jekyll and Hyde end?
The book?
Yeah, does he
He dies, I'm pretty sure.
How does he die?
Cancer?
A terminal disease.
I'm just about that. He's like going to kill someone. He's like, oh no, heart attack!
Oh no, cancer! And then falls over.
Gave him like a hulkish evil form, but also... Actually, I don't even think the hulkish thing happens in the book.
No, I think he just looks sort of like lumpy, you know?
Yeah,
like
he just sort of becomes like a creature of id.
Right. He's not a horrible monster. He's just sort of like an uglier version of himself, kind of, because he's like a shitty guy.
But yeah, I was going to say, because he's just a shittier person.
Yeah. And all shitty people are ugly, as we know.
Also,
if you're ugly, you're a shitty person.
Maybe that was just like sort of intermittent slow burn radiation sickness.
Maybe
yes.
from the crazy potion
from
he was
the
drinking.
He drank, yeah.
So believe it or not, this 2004 movie, which has a lot of janky CGI, a lot of really awkward costuming, a lot of just like silly shit, like,
a lot of tits forward,
a lot of extensions in Hugh Jackman's hair, is at least if you take the director's word for it, based on the book. Frankenstein, as well as the book Dracula.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is what I wanted to, because I didn't read this quote. I know this is something that you saw.
Yeah.
Did he say it's based, or did he say inspired by?
Oh,
those are
I mean,
two different things.
Inspired by, but he basically wanted to like heavily homage both stories.
Okay, I think that's fair, and it also seems like he's heavily homaging, if that's a word, the Universal Monster movies upon which this is drawing from, which.
And not only that, but we also saw some influence of, like, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Right.
Which, for me personally, made it feel even worse, because I'm like, I mean,
you
I'm not trying to say...
You could be watching Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah. Well, and it's not, I'm not trying to say that's, like, you know, the best movie ever made, but it had more interesting visual stuff than this.
I think if, like, Bram Stoker's Dracula is sort of, like, a very smart director kind of threading that needle, this is a director walking in with a cake and tripping over a ball, and then, like, it fumbles to the floor.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, like... Map, travel,
right.
Map in the distance, travel in the foreground,
right.
Kind of stuff.
Fast,
well,
angry skies.
I don't really know I haven't seen this quote either, but I don't really know what the fuck he was trying to accomplish here. It seems like he's only taking, like, the broadest strokes of
right.
It's like, well, okay, get the Dracula and his three wives, that's from the book, and the general concept of, like, guy makes the creation and regrets it, and the creation's, like, just a normal guy wants to live his life.
Just a little guy.
Big guy.
Just a big guy.
Just a big guy.
Just a little big guy.
With a little zappy thing in his chest.
A little peephole in his chest.
Yeah, with a, hot, like a sort of Spencer's Gift.
Yeah, right. When you touch it, there should be a scene where Hugh Jackman touches it and his extensions just stand up.
I bet if we saw his dick, it's a lava lamp.
That's a good good joke.
Yeah, that is.
I awarded you five comedy points.
I'm sure it is.
It's like you can definitely see how he was sort of just smashing. And I think like the Universal Monster movie comes into it when you start adding in like the werewolf thing. Well, and
yeah, I mean, Wolfman is obviously, there is no canonical Wolfman story, correct, right? This is just sort of a thing that we've had in mythos. Mm-hmm. And like, you look at the Universal movie as something that's kind of established a lot of the hard and fast rules for what we now associate with a werewolf or wolfman now.
What is like the OG movie, though?
I think it's the Universal
one. The Lon Chaney one, right?
Yeah, there's probably like some silent one or something before that, maybe, but I feel like the one that sort of kicked off the idea of what to expect from a wolfman or werewolf is the Wolfman movie.
I don't really know what to expect. I mean, I that one's, I think, the haziest to me.
I mean, it might be. It's not a great movie. It's an okay movie, but it is very much a movie that sort of establishes the idea. Like, my vague recollection of that movie, too, is that he doesn't even turn into a werewolf when he sees the full moon. It just says, like, you might.
It just, you might.
Yeah. You might not. I don't know. See. A lot of ambiguity here.
Like a maybe wolf.
Yeah.
Like, what are the themes? What is the point of a werewolf movie? Is it like the battle between the beast?
The human and the human? Animal, yeah. I assume. Yeah.
The beast within, a lack of control.
Yeah.
Instinct taking over.
Anger at the Romani people.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Just really wanting to kill vampires.
Yes. Yeah. Being apparently the other canonical
vampire. If Underworld is anything to believe, they...
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Another Kate Beckinsale movie.
Yes, Anger at Bill Nighy.
I feel like, though, it just feels especially weird that he takes those concepts in so many different other weird directions that on paper I don't necessarily hate. In fact, I think some of the ideas are kind of cool. But it does make you wonder then, like, why even homage the originals if we're going to go so far in this other direction?
That's fair, I suppose. I suppose it's probably just one of those things where Stephen Sommers just is a fan of these things and therefore wants to pay lip service to some of the visual flair or plot points of the novel in this movie. I know you were saying that you had read that, but let me tell you, Christopher, the thing that I had read briefly about Stephen Sommers was him talking about how, which I mentioned to you when we were watching this, is how he liked Bram Stoker's Dracula, and he also pays some quick lip service to the Kenneth Branagh Frankenstein movie as well, and basically says, oh, people have already made movies of Frankenstein and of Dracula recently, and I like these movies, and they were well done, which we can quibble about, but beside the point. So I don't want to make another movie that's just, like, I've just done The Mummy, basically, for Universal. Right, and I don't want to go and make another Dracula movie because we've already made a Dracula movie, but what if I could take all my toys out of the toy box and hit them against each other for a while and then make a movie out of that?
Has he played Castlevania?
I'm going to say no, but I think it's an astonishing coincidence.
I think especially with...
He feels like he's probably like a little too old to be into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you that this aggressively feels like, in many respects, a movie adaptation of Castlevania.
Because it's mashing up so many different dark fantasy.
It also has
things.
This sort of weird rule that I've never seen outside of Castlevania, where it's like, Dracula commands all other spooky monsters.
Yep. Right, Dracula's the head bitch in charge.
Yeah. There's, like, some amount of that in the original book, so it doesn't, like, completely come out of nowhere. In the book, they say explicitly he's, like, tutored by the devil in his many magics. So I think that's meant to imply that gives him access. But you definitely, when you think of Dracula, you don't think of him calling up Hellspawn or evil dwarves.
Right.
Like, why do werewolves have to listen to him?
Right. And then the whole werewolf thing also becomes this dumb thing, too, where it seems like the only reason for the justification the movie comes up with for having werewolves in this movie is when they reveal at the end, aha, the only thing that can actually kill Dracula is a werewolf, not all that other crap that you thought, not stakes through the heart or, you know, crosses or light or anything like that. It's a werewolf, and that's why werewolves are in this movie, because one will kill Dracula, and it just sort of feels like this is a lot of work. This is a lot of work you're making for yourself to justify why you want to have werewolves in this movie.
Yeah. So what if there was, like, a weapon, like a whip, maybe, or...
Right. Be very Castlevania.
I just can't believe that, like, if you're into all that stuff, nobody around, I don't know...
Has ever pointed out, hey, have you heard of this video
2004
game?
2004 is not, like...
A
video
long
games
time
aren't
ago.
New.
Yeah, right.
All the DS games have come out. You have so much Castlevania to catch up on.
And one of the definitive Castlevanias, I think, would have been out by that point. Symphony of the Night.
Oh, old by that point.
Yeah.
I do agree that it's strange that at no point anyone seems to have said to Stephen Sommers, hey, you want to know something funny? There's a video game that's a lot like this movie.
And I guess In a weird way, that. I'm more interested.
Right? Maybe you should just play that instead.
I mean, I'm kind of almost more interested in a Castlevania take, because at least to some extent, it's a much more fictionalized and, you well, fictionalized, but kind of, like, is creating its own thing.
Right.
But also, there's sort of just, like, a fun kitchen sink element to Castlevania that's right. just not pulled off well here.
Right. I would say that the few brief moments of this movie that I do kind of enjoy are the ones that feel the most like that, mm-hmm. where it just feels like you're kind of throwing everything together and being like, oh, what can I do with all of this sort of crap?
Which is sort of exciting. Right.
But most of the time, this is a movie that crumbles under its own poor plotting, bad characterization, and just general shit.
I mean, there's a lot of all those other hodgepodge elements that are even outside of, like, the monster things. Like, you were talking about, there's like literally the fucking scene in a James Bond movie yes. where you go visit Q.
Right.
But there's like, it's like the Pope's Q.
Right.
Well, Pope's quartermaster.
It's the papal Q. I do love this touch that you go sit in the confessional and it's an elevator yes. that takes you down.
Of course it is.
Yes, that's fun. That's always fun.
Always going to be that. But yeah, like, he's got like fucking like hydraulic crossbows right. and mm-hmm. like...
Right, and a light bomb and all this other crap.
Yeah.
And it is aggressively, again, like you had said, James Bond talking to Q moment, where he says, here are five or so gadgets, let me explain to you what each one does. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll need it in the movie. Like, gee, do you
I'm
think he's going
to
need this thing?
I'm show you this one.
Yes.
Here's a crossbow that's, like, basically a Gatling. Well, then they show you an actual Gatling yeah. gun at one point, which yeah. is really bananas. My absolute favorite, though, is he's, like... just fires up the old medieval slide projector.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, and he's just like, and we have photographs somehow of everyone. Click, click, click.
8x10 glossies.
Exactly.
The thing that I always remember is the part wherever when Carl is showing Hugh Jackman like the light bomb or something that he's yes. created with like Gobi desert dirt or some shit. Yes. And he shows it to Hugh Jackman, and he's like, this is a light bomb. If it explodes, it goes off with the intensity of 100 suns or some mm-hmm. shit like that. And Hugh Jackman's like, oh, like, what could I use that for? It's like, what couldn't you use that for? No. That could do so many things. They need not be vampires for people to die when you throw this bomb at
right.
them.
Yeah.
If it's as hot as a sun, these people are being incinerated. Do you have no imagination?
But also, even, but you do hunt vampires, presumably.
Right.
So wouldn't you immediately recognize the value and utility of a sunlight bomb?
Yes. So I don't know why the movie is playing coy with this. It's one of those things where, you know, it wants to give you the ambiguous object in the beginning. Right. So when it comes back at the end of Act 2 or whatever. Anyway, so it's something I would have seen in a James Bond movie, too, where he gets, like, three objects that don't come into play ever in the movie. At the end of the movie, it's just him going back 10 chords and being like, I didn't use this.
That would actually be a really funny... kind of like non-joke setup.
That would be a good scene in like a parody of a spy movie where it's like, or there's just like some stuff is really good and some stuff is just absolute shit.
Right, it has no relevance to anything you're doing whatsoever. Yeah.
I don't know. Fun.
I mean, it's a party thing.
Look, we had a very big R&D budget here and we just went wild with it.
So like, we obviously already kind of got the Wikipedia plot summary.
Yeah.
Like, what do we think about the actual plot of this movie?
Well, I mean, you may recall, Chris, a moment ago I said it was dog shit.
It was.
Yeah.
What are some problems with it, do we think?
well,
it's too long.
How much time do you have? Yes. For one, it is 2 hours and 11 minutes.
This is so...
2 hours and 11 minutes, and it feels it.
It's a slog.
Yeah.
Well, especially when you get to the end, and you're like, how many fucking times
right.
can you swing on a rope?
Yes, exactly. Like,
castle?
Around the point where we get to Act 3, I'm just sitting there tapping my watch, looking at the screen, being like, hey, Hugh, step on it a little bit. We all got places to be at this point.
I feel like a lot of things happen twice that don't need to happen twice. Like,
yes.
We wake up Dracula babies twice.
Right, yes. They attack the village twice.
Yeah.
The wives attack the village twice.
I remember thinking when he gets turned into... when he first gets... They find the werewolf bite on him, and Frankenstein the monster's like, now you will be haunted by the thing you want or whatever. And
how ironic.
And I was like, ah, great, we're heading into Act 3. No, there's so much more.
Right, we have a fucking masquerade ball to get through right now.
Yeah, the masquerade plot needs to go.
Right, and the thing is, it's one of those things too where it's like, visually speaking, this is interesting to me, the idea of a vampire masquerade ball. That's a fun thing. If this happened in the first half hour of the movie when we first meet Dracula at a vampire ball, cool introduction. But at this point, again, tapping my watch,
watch.
Yeah, also, speed this shit up.
The Dracula that we've been dealing with is not a I have fun masquerade. No.
Right, right. Aggressively not at all.
I live in an emo castle.
Right, I scream a lot. Yeah. I walk on ceilings and make my Jawas do my bidding.
For some reason.
Yeah, it's an ice castle for some dumb shit that we can't. We don't really know why, but it is.
It seems to contain, like, it's almost like it's in its own ice dimension.
Yeah, I don't really understand that, because there's the secret entrance through the mirror, but, like, the brides can fly to the village easily on their own,
right.
So, like, they don't need the secret entrance. They must be somewhere within flying distance, whatever that might entail. I don't know. I'm just... The world building also in this fucking mess.
Yeah. I mean, I think they kind of intertwine, really.
Yeah.
Because we really only find out more about the world as the plot just sort of careens from thing to thing.
Yeah.
I don't know that we understand, get really even an understanding of this world. We get... There's a village, there's a castle, there's the Vatican, there's
right.
the woods.
There's Frankenstein's castle, too. So there's both Dracula's castle
and
Frankenstein's castle, which are
right.
two separate
but
castles.
But we do spend a lot more time inside Dracula's.
Yeah,
we do. It's interesting, though, also, that in the beginning when they're doing the black and white prologue, which I kind of like, you see that creepy Undertaker guy at Frankenstein's castle, which implies
Igor.
That Frankenstein... No, it's Igor is there, but there's that weird blonde guy who keeps, like, making coffins and being like, hey, is it big enough for you, Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, like, in the opening, he's one of the people being like,
with torches, being like,
yeah,
there's Frankenstein, get him. So, like, apparently both castles are relatively close to this village anyway, so it's just, again, what is the fucking map of this
castle
world.
Neighbors.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know.
I don't need someone to, like, unscroll a map and be like, Dracula?
But I mean, I don't
Frankenstein.
I'm just talking, like, you're talking about we don't know this world. I mean, I'm clearly dealing with, you're talking about, like, specifics. I just want
right.
to get the general shape of this world.
Also
I think
true.
It's a world where, like, the Vatican actually hunts down
monsters.
Supernatural
right.
monsters
right.
that are maybe evil, maybe not. Are they catholically evil? Like, are they all demonic? Because
right.
it seems like Mr. Hyde was just
yes.
kind of a rude dude.
Right, like, why is it
with
their
attitude.
Job? Right, yeah, yes.
attitude.
He is cool, but rude.
But he's not a demon.
Right, so why is it their business to kill this man? Is it because he's in Notre
yeah.
Dame Cathedral
and
therefore it's stepping on their toes?
The Q guy is mad that they didn't bring him in alive
yeah.
to, like, experiment
right.
on him, which doesn't sound very Christian.
No, I agree with that as well. It's also, kind of, like, that's a potentially interesting thing that the movie could have fun with the idea
yeah.
that there is this secret group,
like a monster hunting group,
right?
There, we all know these,
right? It's you know, everyone from every religion is represented in this group.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, assisting you in some way or another. But you basically just have that one scene in the beginning where they only allude to other people being involved when you see, like, a monk and some shit, and then for the rest of the movie, it's basically just taking orders from the Vatican. So is this just the Vatican's group, and they're just inviting other people to
yeah.
it?
Yeah, well, then there's also this fucking thing about maybe Van Helsing also being something
yeah.
called the Left Hand of God.
Right, there's so
the Archangel Gabriel.
Yeah.
yeah.
This might be, like, something to go into also when we talk about Van Helsing as a character or some shit, but there's so much adding up in his backstory that I don't fucking give a shit about. So you have the fact that he might be the Angel Gabriel, you have the fact that he has no memory of anything, but doesn't seem to really bother him that
mm-hmm.
much. Like, they pay lip service to it one or two times, but you would think that he should have a conversation with Kate Beckinsale where he's talking about how, oh, it's you know, like, I was sad once that I didn't have memories, now I think maybe it's a blessing, or I'm still worked up that I don't have memories, what's that all about?
I honestly
but
forgot
the movie
about it.
Right, the movie barely deals with it, so why is he
Did
missing memories in the first place?
When memories start?
No.
Like, what point, what's the first thing he remembers?
Right, that's
30,
that's an
10?
Excellent question. Right, does he, I think... Maybe this is me making it up, or maybe it was in the Wikipedia thing. I think it said something about how he doesn't remember anything before he showed up on the steps of a church and they took him in and were like, hey, you want to be a monster hunter for us or some shit like that?
Yeah.
So presumably there's, like, 35, 38 years of his life that he has no recollection of whatsoever.
Yeah, like...
And why?
He was a full adult when this happened?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's... Weird.
Right, it is weird. It's weird because these are all things that could be one thing that you focus on for your character. Your character
yeah.
has no memories, your character is a secret angel, your character is part of a secret military Catholic organization
yes.
dedicated to killing literature monsters.
I suppose the going logic at the moment was probably, we'll figure it out in the sequel
yes.
and
yes.
in the third movie.
I'm sure.
Because, I mean, this was clearly a...
Yeah, like...
Oh, this more than perhaps any other movie we've done for this summer theme, this is aggressively a franchise that wanted to happen.
Yeah. And again, I think a lot of this stuff was like, we're gonna this is setting up for the future, but it's like, that's too much. Too much setting.
I agree.
First of all, that's too many different ideas, and also just hints. Don't have Dracula be like, that's who you are.
Yes. Yeah.
That's who you are, son.
Well, especially since there's, like, very little build-up to it, and like Brendan was saying, it's mentioned so little in the movie that when you get to that, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess that matters. I guess it matters that you killed Dracula.
It doesn't end up having much bearing on the story. It's not like he turns into an angel to kill Dracula. He turns into a fucking werewolf.
Right, so it's just all of these weird little, also, wouldn't it be cool pieces that add up to nothing.
I don't really feel like he processes enough, or at all, even, like... Excuse me, I don't believe I'm an angel. I believe I'm just
a guy. Man. Yeah.
He's just a dude.
It seems to mostly just bounce off him. Like, yeah. When it happens, he's okay.
I don't think he speaks a line in reaction to being called an angel.
The left hand of God or whatever. Yeah.
It's bananas.
Yeah. No, he's just so blasé about any weird aspect of his backstory that it just sort of feels like, well, if you don't care, then I gotta say,
this kind of thing bothers me so much in any story where, like, somebody drops some crazy revelation.
Yeah, and everyone's just like, oh, brush
it off. And nobody's instantly is like, that's fucking crazy. Yeah. I'm like, no, when things are crazy, you need to say that they're crazy.
Right.
And if they don't, now my mind is going, why aren't they thinking?
Right, like, so this is normal. This is just a normal day to you finding out that you might be an angel or something. Yeah. This, to me, is almost the reverse problem that so many franchisey movies have now, where it feels like there is an issue with a lot of franchise movies where it feels like the first movie is a tee up to something, and then they're like, but the second movie, we're gonna go nuts with all this shit. This one almost feels like we've got all these great ideas and we must cram them into the first movie. We can't have any hints lingering that this might be something we'll deal with later, so we're all just gonna sort of shove it all together and let you try and parse out what this is gonna make of it.
Basically,
I don't remember this enough. I mean, we just watched it, but like,
it happens.
There's a lot
of
Is there a version of the, based on what we see in the movie, is there a version where, is there an interpretation of this where he doesn't react because he knows this already?
I suppose that could be very possible.
Which is also bananas that we don't know.
Right.
We don't even know
if
he knows.
If we are to look at this strictly by what we are given in the movie itself, he doesn't know anything about his backstory, right? It would be one thing if he knew he was an angel somehow and just wasn't mentioning it. But we are led to believe throughout this movie that Hugh Jackman has no idea what his deal is.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. Again, just pick something. Pick something interesting, make it his deal, and then build the character and plot around that. Don't just throw in whatever idea you have lying around on your shelf to make this the coolest backstory for the character.
Yeah. But, and it does feel, because Brendan used this phrase a couple times, and I think it's very accurate. It looks and feels like you're just sort of smashing action figures together.
It does.
Especially whenever there's a costume change, especially whenever there's some new gadget.
I was
going to
say, whenever Van Helsing has his little whirly blades that he keeps in his hand, it's one of those things you see this and you instantly think, oh, there must have been a toy that had spinning blades or some shit like that.
Do you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember that dumb movie, Krull the Conqueror?
I've never seen it. I'm dimly aware that it exists.
Wait, is that...
He wields this weapon he calls a glaive, but it's literally just, like, a giant throwing star.
Is Krull the Conqueror called that, or is it called Krull? I think you're confusing it with Krull the Conqueror.
Yeah, okay.
I was gonna say, you've confused
then
two
I have
there.
Seen
Krull. Is with the glaive, and it's, like, a weird sort of, like, distant... It's, like, one of those movies where... humans from Earth have gone to space, but it's been so long we're fantasy times again.
Right. Yes. We've looped back around to fantasy.
And then aliens come on, like, a castle in the sky style spaceship.
Right, it's fantasy, but with aliens.
It's just what his spinning hand blades were giving me was that stupid glaive thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, how would you throw that? How do you use it?
When also that he's able to cut a concentric circle in the floor.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
And then it's very brief, but just that moment of Mr. Hyde falling through, like, a window and
leaving
just
a Hyde shaped hole. Yes.
Yeah.
I can accept if you have one exciting weapon or something like that, you know? So I don't remember Krull very well, but if this is his primary weapon, it's sort of like, yeah, that's fine, go with that. When you start throwing in three or four weapons for this character to pick from, that's when it starts to feel like, oh, you're hoping to sell toys at this point.
My favorite weapon, though, was the stick that was an arm.
Yes.
Had a hand
it was
a stake.
A stick with an arm that was holding a stake.
Which is very fun.
But it's not made of wood.
No, it's metal.
No, it's metal or something.
So,
which, why?
What the point?
What does that do?
Does wood not... Is any steak a good steak?
I think any steak is a good steak.
I think it's like a bad steakhouse. All steaks are bad steaks.
All steaks are bad steaks.
Yes. It's like
steaks.
Me when I go to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
Was there...
That's right. Coming for you, Ruth's Chris.
This... my Ruth? I don't know. The name always confused me. That
Ruth's Chris
Steakhouse.
Because it was Chris Steakhouse, and then a woman named Ruth, I think, bought the chain, so it became Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
It's just...
Are you for real?
I'm almost 100%
that's
sure.
Fucking that's fucking stupid as hell.
I 100% agree with you.
Just call it Ruth's Steakhouse.
I think the idea was that the name has such value that she couldn't get rid of it, but she wanted her name in there because people are megalomaniacs, so it became Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
She had to
Steakhouse.
Put it in front. She couldn't call it Chris Ruth's.
Yeah, I also... Yeah, Steakhouse by Ruth. Chris Steakhouse
presented
by Ruth.
Do you know how much more natural natural it is to say Chris Ruth than
Chris.
Well, because it doesn't make any sense to have an S sound followed by.
Yeah. No, it's impossible to say. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. You can't say it. That's why I'm saying you're a shitty chain, and I hope you're gone.
This sort of dovetails with what we were talking about, just sort of general stuff in the world and plot, but like just how things looked. Costumes, animation, sets, the whole shebang.
So here's the thing that I kind of am thinking about this movie, having seen it twice now, is so that we alluded to it but didn't really talk about the details of it. The movie opens with a black and white prologue that's kind of visually referencing the Universal monster movies of the 30s and 40s.
Which I think was fun.
I agree. I kind of like that. Then that black and white prologue stops and we go to sort of a full-on color. And it has an aesthetic which I would describe as 1980s action figure, where it's almost like you can see these things and almost envision them as play sets for a child, especially Dracula's castle with the enormous bridge and the swing. You can just see like, oh, this had a bunch of strings hanging off the side for your action figures to swing across.
Yeah.
And it has that aesthetic to it. So for me, I think I have an issue with the fact that the first 5-6 minutes of the movie are a more kind of straightforward but slightly heightened sort of universal black and white vibe. And then we go into this sort of visual overload CGI excess early 2000 style for the rest of the movie. I think either one could be fine. I wish the movie had just sort of picked a lane and gone with it, you know? If it had a more striking visual style. I mean, so there are things like the castle, which I said I like. I like some of the interiors. But then you also have things like the village in Transylvania, which just looks generic village in Transylvania. There's nothing really interesting there. I almost think that if this movie had someone with a stronger sense of visual style, we could have had at least a little bit more fun with it, because as it stands now, it's kind of just a weird hodgepodge of very traditional and very of the moment imagery, and they're not mixing together in a way that works for me.
You brought up the point of it being like a very of its time movie, and it kind of made me wonder philosophically on a wider scale, like
oh boy,
like I don't know if I can articulate this well, but it's like Do you think, hypothetically, do you think people in the 40s were like, God, the movies in the 30s looked so cheesy and bad? But it's like, it's like the way that we view aesthetics and style, I feel, in the past 30 years is that, like, everything 5 years older is cheesy and bad now.
I mean, is it just because technology has advanced with such leaps and bounds,
right?
That's
what I'm saying. What I'm saying to Chris is that, is it because, like, sort of exponentially faster, we sort of change our...
Right, we're so quick to be like, oh, this looks bad, not nearly as good as we have now. So, I think there are... I wonder a little bit. I think there are some exceptions to that. The one that I can always think of is, did you ever see The Mummy Returns?
No.
The second? So, the thing in The Mummy Returns is that The Rock is in it as the Scorpion King.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see him as a human in the beginning, just a regular guy, just a little scamp.
Just a little guy.
And then at the end of the movie, he is full on the Scorpion King, The Rock, which is to say that he is like a centaur who has the upper body of The Rock and the bottom body of a scorpion. And this character is realized entirely in CGI. It looks like shit.
Yeah,
it's one of those, even at the time, this wasn't something when he came out, I wasn't like, oh my God, like they did it. They did CGI that looks real. I was like, why are they doing this? Whose choice is it to put this garish CGI The Rock on top of a scorpion? If you had even done some sort of cheat where you had, you know, the upper half of the actual Rock on a scorpion, I would have been like, okay, fine, that's presentable.
Yeah. So we complained a lot about the Giants and Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yes,
right?
Yes, Jack the Giant Slayer, yes. Giant I think Slayer. even something like Tron Legacy at the time, people were like, oh, Jeff Bridges, like the CGI Jeff Bridges is weird looking in this.
Yeah.
So I do think that there are certain times where you see something and you're like, holy shit, nothing will ever be better than this. And then 5 years later you come back and you're like, oh, actually this looks like garbage. But I think there are times when you see something that even of the moment, even with your lowered standards of that time period, you're still kind
you're
of like, oh no, this is not right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess I don't know where it would have stood, but like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's more just like, it's not quite the era. It's beyond like the technical limitations. What we're seeing in this movie isn't quite the sort of like gritty dark shit of like the Dark Knight movies and all of those style, or
right.
like the new Joker, where it's like everything's sort of dark and gritty and the plot is super serious.
Yes.
This is more of a weird campy vibe, which is like, I'm trying to like, yeah, I guess like, yeah, this is what this would have been the era where we got like Keanu Reeves, Constantine.
Right.
And other similar movies of that ilk of like.
If only Van Helsing had Tilda Swinton as an angel.
I mean, it's got Hugh Jackman as an angel. Maybe at the end, Tilda Swinton should have shown up and been like, guess what? You are an angel. I got some news for you.
She also, doesn't she play
Gabriel? Yeah, I'm pretty sure she does.
Yeah.
So maybe at the end, he should have just ripped off his skin a la Werewolf and revealed
Tilda
it was Tilda Swinton.
That would be instantly
A-plus movie, no notes.
Yeah.
I also just wanted to throw out there, I thought most of the costumes were pretty dumb looking. We kept calling.
Well, again, very of the moment. Like, Lisa, you had Dracula's Black costume, Parade, which looks so much like, yeah, a My Chemical Romance.
Gerard Way coat.
Right, yes.
He's ready to lead the Black Parade.
Exactly.
Yes. And you've got Hugh Jackman with his extensions and his big overcoat.
I freaking hate that hat.
I do too.
I want to burn that
so
hat.
Dumb. Yeah.
There's nothing about Hugh Jackman's look that I like in this
he
movie.
He looks very bad. Yeah.
Also, it makes him look so wide.
Yeah. You know, it does. And I mean, I know he's a big, muscly guy,
yeah,
but nothing that he's wearing is doing him any favors. He looks worse, and he looks, like, bulky in a bad way.
Yeah.
And then, like,
is he tall in real life?
He is a tall guy. I think he's...
Because he plays Wolverine.
Yeah.
Historically short man.
Historically short man, yeah. I know that's
a
something...
A short king.
That they had to put James Marsden in lifts when they stood next to each other because,
yeah,
they're about the same size in real life.
That's
but
funny.
They were like, no, you still gotta be taller than Wolverine, who's canonically short, even though he is still 6'1 or something,
yeah,
like that in this movie.
I also just thought, I don't know, just a lot of the werewolves looked awful.
Yeah. So the only thing I can really say about the werewolves is I kind of like the idea, again, in the same sort of throwing action figures way, that you rip off your skin and become,
yes,
a werewolf.
It was a freaky idea.
I think that's a neat idea, but then again, you get to the issue that I kept having watching this, when they would turn back into human, they would have like tattered pants on to preserve the modesty of the actors. And it's like, okay, so you were wearing pants below your skin this entire time? Like when you rip your skin off and rip your pants grow back or something like that? Just,
yeah.
It's one of those things where like this just raises more questions.
Yeah.
Like you could have just shot away from the body or like hid them in shadows. You could have had other cheats. There's just something very weird about the fact that they keep regenerating ripped up tattered clothing that is driving me nuts.
It does make more sense that apparently that little loincloth thing was CG'd in and that,
yes,
he was naked. So it did, maybe in its original conception they were committing to...
Well, I guess they were doing it for Hugh certainly, but not for my hunky prince Will Kemp, yes,
yeah,
who keeps wearing progressively smaller pants as he comes back.
I also just, I hated the look of the wives. They're wearing like these dumb prom dress looking bullshit things and they turn into weird bat demon creatures.
Very like, I don't know, of whatever culture they're supposed to be.
Yeah. It feels
like,
very much like a Princess Jasmine costume,
yeah,
or something at some point.
It looks like a harem. Almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
it's
Eastern nature.
Right. It's one of those things where like, if you're going to do something anachronistic and weird, at least make it look good, but this doesn't look good.
No.
This,
yeah,
just looks cheap and bad.
And that when they're in monster form, it looks ugly. Same deal for Dracula. I also
yeah,
think, honestly, the worst bit for me is the Frankenstein's monster.
The Frankenstein's monster is so weird.
So awful.
Again,
looking.
Like Lee said, they're weird little glass bits where you can see lightning coursing around. Like, at one point, also, he gets hit in the face or something and his face, like, pulls apart,
yeah,
and he has to go, like, argh, like, shoves his face back together.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, there are so many elements in here that I'm almost a little bit like, that's interesting,
to
but
me,
then the movie goes too far.
It almost looks like he's made of bits of Play-Doh.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look real. There's nothing about him that looks physical.
Kind of clay-like.
Yeah, yeah.
And just the last thing I just wanted to throw in there was, I know we figured out that it was based on a real thing, but just those little unexplained Jawa creatures that are running around that lab.
The Dwergi were
apparently,
yeah,
like, yeah, Dwargar, like a reference to like dwarves.
Evil, yeah,
dwarves,
bad dwarves,
basically.
Why,
or something.
Why are there dwarves?
Right. Again, what purpose did this serve the story to have them there other than just to have a little guy running
around?
I'm
not 100%, but I'm 99%. Even Castlevania didn't have dwarves.
I don't think so.
There are no evil dwarves in Castlevania. There's a lot of shit in Castlevania. You got knights made of glass.
It also began to feel like a bit of character creep, right? Because it's like we had the dwarves and Igor.
Right. I mean, again, this is just so many of the problems. The movie can't just be content with, like, two or three monsters,
mm-hmm,
or,
we,
you know,
all of them.
Right, you have to start, like, it's one of those points where you eventually start to be like, okay, where's the mummy? Where's the creature in the Black Lagoon? Is the Invisible Man here and I just can't see him the entire time? You know, it just feels like at a certain point you're just checking off boxes,
mm-hmm,
rather than trying to organically,
yeah,
use these things or create a story that can sustain itself. You're just throwing things together for the sake of throwing shit together.
Here's...
And again... As a dumb 12-year-old, I probably would have really loved that action figure toyetic premise. As an adult watching this movie, I'm just like, this is too fucking much. Sorry,
it feels very tedious.
I think if there are just a bunch of monsters in the movie, and like if it's, again, an underworld situation, it's like there's werewolves and there's vampires and they don't like each other, they're factions,
uh-huh,
then sure, go nuts, have a lot of monsters. But as soon as it's like, I think if you have... this premise that, like, I control all monsters,
mm-hmm,
I would argue there need to be way more monsters.
Yeah.
Because the fact that there's only, like, five, I'm like, that's it?
That's all you got?
That's,
yeah, that's all in the world?
I need to see, like, a sort of crowd shot where they just CGI hell a bunch of fucking... just let me see the variety.
Saruman in the Two Towers giving his speech on top of his tower. Look down and there's, you know, like...
Or, like, how, like, Maleficent... just sort of panned across this,
like all these CGI goons.
Just like, who the fuck are all these weird fake?
No, I agree. It does feel sort of like you stopped at five. You went to five and you were like, good job, done for the night.
It's like, now I have more, the dwarves give me more questions than answers.
Yeah, I feel like if they had not included the dwarves, I could have been like, okay, this is fine. But now it's just sort of like, okay, now they've got evil dwarves here too. Like, what else should be here isn't here?
Yeah. Do we have anything else about visuals or the world we want to say before we move on to characters and actors?
I don't know. Again, I think the prologue kind of worked for me, but I think it was you, Chris, who pointed out when we were watching it that it almost feels like it was a decision made late in the game to convert it to black and white.
It feels that way.
Because it doesn't feel like it was shot with the intent of being in black and white. At various points, it becomes sort of hard to see, and not in a sort of artistic chiaroscuro sort of thing, just in the sense that this is a lot of black and I can't make out anything that's happening.
There were some moments when it was effective. I thought the shot of the people who kind of surrounded that windmill when they start to throw their torches, that's kind of a cool shot to see in black and white. But yeah, for the most part, you did think like, wow, that's cool. It does not look like they shot it to be that way, and I kind of wish we could have seen what that would have been like had they done that.
Right.
I think it would have just looked a lot cooler.
Yeah, and it almost makes me think again that I wish the movie had just done one or the other. I wish it had been a black and white homage to the aesthetic style of Universal Monster movies of the 1930s and 40s, or it had just gone full on modern day goof fest.
Yeah. Like, what was that Werewolf by Night thing that...
Yeah, the Marvel one.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was a good black and white experiment.
I was going to talk about that at some point. I've been thinking about it because of the Werewolf thing, and I was remembering... Yeah, that was such a small thing. They just did it, and it's like... It's just
it was out. Like, oh, hey, good job, guys.
Yeah.
It was fun.
You did a little thing, and it worked.
Always happy to see you, Gabe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also that, too.
For sure.
Yep.
All right. So, I guess we start with our main... Our main boy.
Our main boy, Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman playing Gabriel Van
Helsing. His Hugh acting man?
Hugh acting man. What do we think?
I mean, I like Hugh Jackman.
Yep.
This character still is a mess.
Yep.
I think he's doing the best he can do with a character who has so many possible backstories and ticks that you could grab onto. He's trying to make it feel like a cohesive whole, and it almost worked. Like, that it all kind of feels like it works is more of a testament to Hugh Jackman's innate charisma than it is to anything else about this role. I think he could have been a good Van Helsing. It does feel like, on paper, he's a good choice for this sort of character, this sort of dark, vaguely troubled, badass type guy. That feels, again, it's a little just like Wolverine, but, you know, it could have worked.
Right. And it's also perplexing to me that he's American.
Yeah, that's weird, too. I don't know why he's using an American accent.
Who knows?
It almost just, maybe he was in
limited
characters Wolverine was
limited
like.
Limited accent abilities on that guy?
I guess. I feel like you could probably, if you can do Australian, I think you can do British.
Didn't he
thought.
Do British when he was
He must
Leopold?
Have at some point. Oh, yeah, he
when
did.
He was who?
Leopold. And Kate and Leopold.
Kate and Leopold.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
I guess he could, well... Is he supposed to be British? I mean...
He's American, but, like, off the boat British, I think, kind of.
Okay.
So, yeah. He could have done something. It is weird that he is the only American in this movie.
Maybe that's his secret.
Despite,
he's an American name.
Why not America?
I will say the character is bad. It's hard to judge the acting on the character because the character is so fucked.
Yeah.
Again, I don't, like... When somebody is given crazy revelations about their past and their reaction is just sort of to, like, stare.
Huh. Yeah.
And not say anything, I'm like, what's going
just
on?
Just sort of, right. Yeah, there's no emotional investment happening here at this point.
So it's hard to say. But I think I'm, like, less into Hugh Jackman, maybe, than the rest of us at this table. But, I mean, I don't like his look at all for this role.
No,
it's a bad look.
It's bad. I mean, beyond the costumes we just talked about, his hair is horrendous.
His hair is a mess.
It's so distracting.
I hate it so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
The extensions just do not do him any favors.
It makes him look very goofy. Like didn't you point it out, Lee? It's like very Fabio.
It is Fabio.
It is very very romance novel. It's not a good look.
All right, so then we also have Kate Beckinsale as Anna Valerius.
Chris,
I
feel like we had talked briefly when Lee was trying to track down a package earlier tonight, how I don't know if Kate Beckinsale is a good actor.
It's a good question.
And I'm trying to think if I've ever seen her in something where I've walked away being like, huh, good performance, Kate Beckinsale. It's certainly not this movie.
I saw her in a bummer indie once called Snow Angels that I was like, she was good in. But otherwise, I think I've only seen her in this kind of movie.
Right, I mean, I feel like I've seen her in a lot of shit is mostly the
thing. I don't really recognize her from other things.
Well,
she's a name, but...
Superman Returns.
She was Lois in them?
Yeah.
What?
Do you remember? Isn't she?
No. You're thinking of
Bosworth.
Bosworth.
Oh, the other Kate. Too many Kates.
The other Kate.
Yeah, the other Kate. Yeah, Kate Beckinsale must have been in something that I walked away from thinking good work. But
she weirdly was Adam Sandler's wife.
Was
Click.
Superman Returns the one where she does sort of a Katharine Hepburn vibe?
A little bit. Yeah, that's
and
Kevin Spacey.
I know which one Superman Returns is, but is that where the Lois Lane is doing like, I've got a transatlantic accent and I talk fast?
It's been such a long ass time.
I know that there's one Lois Lane that does that. And I can't remember. So it's definitely not Amy Adams.
No, it's definitely. I can tell you that much. It's definitely
Miss
not Amy Adams.
Tinkling.
Yeah, where am I supposed to tinkle? She was in Pearl Harbor, which I've also never. Serendipity.
Oh my God!
That was Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I guess she was fine.
Yeah, it's one of those, yeah, sure, fine, you know, not your fault sort of movies.
I think this, her, but the, I don't know, the accent is so cheesy. I can't.
She is Hero in the Kenneth Branagh Much Ado. Do you remember her from that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
She's fine in that.
Yeah, it's been a while, but that's my recollection. Hero is not like a huge character with a lot of range to play.
She's asked to sort of be tragic and sad.
And she's also apparently in The Aviator, which I've still never seen.
Yeah,
I guess
she plays
at some point.
Ava
she...
Gardner.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You've never seen The Aviator?
I know, right?
You would like it.
Who did I watch it with?
Not
you would
Brandy.
Like it.
Yeah, I need to...
It's one of Cate Blanchett's best performances.
I do. I have seen... Like, I've seen footage of Cate Blanchett in it as Katharine Hepburn, which I think she's
so
great.
So good.
She's in Cold Comfort Farm, which I do remember liking, but have not seen in years.
Is this just a comedy?
Yeah, it's like a parody of a certain style of British literature.
Oh, okay.
And so I think it's fun, but anyway.
Yeah, her accent is so cheesy. It screams of like sci-fi made for TV.
Right. Yes.
And just in general, the whole character is like kind of fake action.
Well, I mean, you're right. It's one of those things where she's a tough broad, but she's sexy as hell and wears corsets and high heels.
Her Anna, a fake gamer girl.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Fake Monster Hunter girl.
Yeah.
Well, I just mean, and it's not like necessarily like if she was a person, this would be a character flaw. But like within the movie, she's always setting out to do something, and then something happens. She gets injured. She gets knocked out. She gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
She gets knockout gassed by Van Helsing. It's like they always pull the punch. She never actually until I guess she stakes what's her face, but that's still with an assist from someone else.
Right.
She never gets a moment where you're like, oh,
she did a thing.
She
Good
did
job.
A thing
right.
all by herself.
Yeah. I guess the closest is spilling the globule on the floor.
Yeah, I guess so. And I guess getting that werewolf cure.
Yeah. Managing to catch a spear while swinging on a rope across a crevice.
So insane. And it's not like her character, I know that she's meant to be badass and everything, but it did feel like they were pulling her back so she didn't necessarily, like, overtake.
Yeah, that's possible.
Hugh Jackman, Helsing.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, though, if they had let her do that, that would have been more interesting an actual two-hander.
A lot of the scenes in the movie were, like, Anna being like, we need to go kill Dracula, and him being like, no, we can't kill Dracula, because I have to keep you safe, and also we have to save the rest of your family.
Right, also XYZ.
Right now, and it's like, I mean, it doesn't paint a great picture of her as a character.
No. Right. It's also one of the, like, they have no chemistry together, I think another thing. And so to the point when she dies at the end, I'm just sort of like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I really, like... I almost never say this, but it really shouldn't be a romance in this.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
No, there's no time
You don't
for
even
it.
Understand
right,
why
exactly.
they got together.
Right. No. And I mean, I think this also ties with the idea that if Hugh Jackman's really worked up about his memories, there should be a scene where he's, like, bonding with Kate Beckinsale and talking about, like, how sad and tragic this is for him that allows the two of them to sort of connect on a more meaningful level. But you don't get any of them connecting meaningfully in this movie. They just sort of share a lot of angry or sexy looks at each other and kind of bicker a little bit, but not in like a fun, you know, screwball comedy bickery sort of way, just in sort of snipey, bitchy kind of way.
Yeah, these are kind of very shallow characters.
Yeah.
And what we get of Anna is like somebody who's like really hot-tempered and determined to like kill Dracula and save her brother, and that's it.
And that's all.
It?
Yep, that's it.
I honestly don't. I mean, I guess Richard Roxburgh as Dracula.
I think he's fun. I don't
do
like the
what?
Character
he
of Dracula.
He's silly, and
yeah.
I do appreciate it.
I appreciate that he's at 11 for kind of the entire movie.
Yeah. He at least is, like, doing a good... He's bringing a performance.
I think he almost kind of gets how absurd this movie is and is going... Like, I kind of wish that... What?
I think he says where he's like, where they're like, do you have no heart? And he's like, no!
I have no heart! I am hollow!
I
also love teach them.
Yeah, and he just shoves
throws his wives off
off the balcony.
So good and ridiculous. Yeah, he's very hammy. It's like, I like his performance, but I think the character is very...
Yeah, so the big issue I think I have with this character is that it feels like it can't decide if Dracula is supposed to be at all sympathetic. And I know this is an issue we kind of talked about with the Bram Stoker's Dracula, where Lee and I had different ideas than you did, Chris, about like how sympathetic this character is supposed to be. At times, this movie really feels like it wants you to sort of sympathize with Dracula. And I think there's a few things about that. Like I said, like there's the part earlier on when Van Helsing kills one of the brides and the town's like, boo, we liked the brides. They only hunted when they were hungry.
Which is
and,
so weird.
And you see Richard Roxburgh pouting in his castle being like, we only kill people when we're hungry. Can they say the same? And I'm watching this thinking like, oh, okay, kind of a valid point. And you also see that he's very... For whatever reason, he's very attached to his vampire brood. It could just be that he wants to take over the world, but he seems to have some sort of weird, genuine distress when his vampire babies start dying. Mm-hmm. And there's also the scene, which I had forgotten early on, where you first see him at the castle with his wives, and you see in the background a silhouette of Igor poking the sexy werewolf with, like, a stick or something. And then and, Dracula is like, Igor, like, why are you being such a dick? And he says something like, it's just what I do. And Dracula's like, Igor, do unto others. And Igor goes, before they do to me. And so it's just sort of like, the movie almost at times wants you to think that this is kind of like a decent guy who's just afflicted by a horrible curse. But then in the end, he's still just a mustache twirling villain who needs to be killed.
He still wants to turn his army of demon children on the world.
Yeah.
They're going to eat all those people.
Right. And you can skillfully walk that line, but this movie is just doing a shit job.
The problem that no one talks about until Daybreakers with like vampires taking over the world is like you will run out of food
right eventually. We're fucked.
Yeah
unless I guess you have some sort of breeding program or something.
Or in the case of Daybreakers, synthetic blood.
But that doesn't work. It stops working in Daybreakers. Spoilers.
Oh no.
But like in you would need like to have intense population control,
right?
Because you need more humans that can produce enough blood
right
to support the vampire population. So it's like, you can't just take over the world. You have to, like, subjugate.
You have to, right. You have to really think this through.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like Dracula's thinking this through very well.
Not at all. Who's next in list, do we feel, really? David Wenham, I guess?
Anyone else?
Carl.
Carl, you know what? He's a fun
side
guy.
Character.
Yeah. I wish he were, like, 10% less goofy and weird. He can be quirky, but, again, you pointed out, Lee, he has, like, this hunched-over posture.
Yeah, I don't know why he's leaning into this, like, almost as if he is, like, a sort of hunched-back assistant, but he's not. He's just...
Right, like, he has scoliosis or something, I guess, maybe.
But he's, like, a good... Yeah, he's your standard sidekick. I mean, literally, like, Constantine had this.
Yes.
There's definitely other movies that aren't Constantine, but I think any other movie, but there's always... Oh, like, National Treasure, you had your sidekick in that.
You
gotta have him.
Yeah, I do wish he was a little bit more actually funny and less, like, movie character funny, you know? Because he's not funny.
There's that bit where he's, like, looking at a painting, and it sort of comes to life in a vision.
Mm-hmm.
He's like,
he goes like, whoa, and falls backward over the couch.
The movie cuts to black.
Yeah, no, I thought it for a minute. I was like, oh, is there something wrong with the stream?
Did the TV turn
off? Yeah, nope. Just a director's choice.
Yeah.
I don't know, I was going to say something else about him, but I forget, so it doesn't matter.
Is there anyone else?
I would throw out real quick, Will Kemp is hot. That's all I got.
How do you really feel, though?
I think he's hot. He's the James Dean of ballet, you know.
That's what I hear.
I would also throw real quick, I think the only other one who may be worth discussing at all would be Shuler Hensley as the monster, who is doing an odd performance that, as I said earlier, reminds me of young Frankenstein more than an actual monster.
He's just a lot of, whoa!
Yeah, it's like, Frankenstein!
That
might also be because he originated the role of Frankenstein's monster in the Broadway musical Young Frankenstein by Mel Brooks.
I mean, there's only so much you can do when you are voicing just a CGI abomination.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's physical. That's practical, I think.
Yeah,
a lot of it is practical.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh,
it looks bad. I
it
agree
looks
with
terrible.
You.
Terrible.
But I'm pretty sure a lot of it is, because he said he was in makeup for like hours to do this. It's always one of those frustrating things when you hear an actor talk about like, boy, yeah, I was in makeup for 5 hours. And you're like, and this is what we ended up with.
Right.
It looks so shitty. The other fun thing, just to note real quick, is that Hugh Jackman worked together on West End in Oklahoma when it was revived in 98. And they also co-starred together in the Music Man revival on Broadway.
Nice.
Shuler Hensley played Marcellus.
I don't know why I started the question that way. What I wanted to ask was, do you think at any point... the guy playing Frankenstein says he doesn't even want to be here anymore.
Yeah, definitely. For sure.
That's the closest.
I don't even want to be, get all this shit off. I have too much shit on me. Get all this shit off me.
Too much shit on me.
He does. It's true,
he
though.
He looks a lot like that guy now that I think
he
about
does.
It.
He does. The, I don't want to be here anymore.
I don't even
want to
be here anymore.
There is a lot of over-costuming and over-makeup
for
among
sure.
this character.
Yeah. I think that about wraps it on characters, though, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess there's really only fixes left to do. If no one else has any other
Look,
thing to leave.
I'll go, because this is quick, all right? This
it.
Is
I'm
kind of...
quick, too.
Yeah, I just tried to...
It's also
yeah.
very quick.
I just...
We didn't, effort was not put...
As we all talked about when we were watching this movie, there's really nothing to save here aside from maybe a basic concept. You're basically stripping this down to studs at this point. All I can kind of say is that I think maybe you need to eliminate the werewolves entirely because this is just too much shit for one movie to sustain. And I think the werewolves are the easiest thing to cut out. You can still find some sort of contrivance to make Dracula need Frankenstein for some other reason. I don't know what that is. I tried thinking about it for a while. I was thinking maybe it had something to do with, like, Dracula wanting to bring back to life some other vampire who was killed by Van Helsing maybe in the past. Like, maybe Dracula himself is sort of the suave, sexy Dracula that we often have in movies, and the other vampire that he wants to bring back to life is more of, like, a creepy Nosferatu-style monster who could sort of, like, maybe Dracula gets staked at the end of this movie and then the Nosferatu-style vampire shows up in a sequel or some shit. I don't know. Van Helsing isn't a member of a religious order because that just makes so many fucking more questions. His backstory needs to be simplified incredibly. I think his sidekick can still be a member of some sort of religious order that has some sort of higher justification behind what he's doing, but I think he should be less of a weird little ticky goofball and more just kind of dour and grumpy about it, sort of. I think that might be just a little bit more of a different energy to play off of. I kind of wish that movies would stop making monsters sympathetic when they are monsters and can just be straight up evil. So that is my note mostly for Dracula. He need not be at all sympathetic. You can go full on evil with him. As for the aesthetics, I think I would like to see this movie lean into its 1998, early 2000s action figure aesthetic and just go full on nuts. Like, make some insane sets that should not exist at all. Go nuts with everyone's, like, again, if everyone's costume was at the level of Frankenstein's, I probably wouldn't care. But then you have shit like Van Helsing and Kate Beckinsale, who look kind of just blah in comparison. Mm-hmm. And even, to a lesser extent, Richard Roxburgh as Count Dracula. So go full on, like, Spawn action figures of the 90s with all of these characters and just make them look as ridiculous as possible, because at least that's a choice. You could at least make a choice for once.
Let me just share, like, a micro memory of, like, when the first time I played Castlevania 64, my first Castlevania game.
Baby's first Castlevania.
And you get through, you get to, like, one of the first big castle level is, like, the castle, like, atrium or whatever. I can't, it's called Castle Center or something.
Uh-huh.
Immediately, and this is something you've never seen before in the game, and it is out of nowhere, a skeleton is coming at you on a motorcycle. I was, like, blown away. I was like, I mean, it was down the hall and I heard it and I was like, is that a fucking motorcycle engine?
I love it. It's like the people watching the movie of The Train in the early 1900s. You see this going, like, whoa! Holy shit, can you do this?
It's just,
like,
so out of place.
I didn't attack it because I was just staring at it like, what is happening right now? That's what this movie
is. Honestly, fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's actually, like, canonically in Castlevania lore that, like, because he's, like, I don't know, evil and he's, like, he's advanced in science.
Uh-huh.
So, like, even though, like, none of this should exist outside of Dracula's castle, he's smart enough that he has, like, electricity and motorcycles and cars. Anyway.
I would also say, real quick, this is something that just occurred to me that I forgot to jot down, but was thinking about it earlier. I think I would also be, like, I know I said I wanted to lean into the sort of action figure aesthetic. I would also think, on the other side of the coin, if you wanted to do something like this that was a little more straight, these movies need to be actually scary. This is, like, the problem with, like, the fucking Tom Cruise Mummy, and even to a lesser extent, the Brendan Fraser Mummy, which I like. Mm-hmm. The Brendan Fraser Mummy is more of, like, an action-adventure movie a la Indiana Jones, and I think that's perfectly fine for it, but whenever Universal was doing their whole Dark Universe thing, like, these movies weren't scary. They were just basically being, like, what if Avengers but monsters?
Right.
So here's the thing. Make them scary. I think it would be fun to have monster movies that are actually scary. And I realize these are characters that have been around for a long time. It's very difficult to do. Someone can do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, go ahead, Lee.
Yeah, I'm doing another... I don't think I'm stripping down. I'm just sort of, like, reducing elements.
Dumping the whole thing in the trash.
Yeah, I'm not
dusting your hands and walking
away. Because
I
that takes too much work. Because then I have to build a new story. Because
then you have to go out to the trash, drag it to the curb.
Yeah,
exactly.
I do hate that.
I do too.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to take what we got and I'm just going to throw away, like, 90% of it. And I think you still have a story. So,
I think you're probably right.
So, like, Van Helsing has no memories.
Uh-huh.
He was taken in by this religious order.
Uh-huh.
to fight monsters, and that gave him, like, a sense of purpose. Maybe he has memories, but it's, like, Jason Bourne style, like, wow, I'm really good at fighting.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
And so that's what he's been doing. He's been, like, fighting various... He's been, like, he's, like, Agent 47 hitman for, like, whatever the papal agency tells him to fucking go out and kill. And maybe there was also, presumably, in those, like, interim years of 3 or 4 years of, like, some... semi-indoctrination of, like, you know, these are bad. This is all bad. Mm-hmm. We're fighting, we're doing good things by getting rid of these monsters. This is, these are our ways. Let me show you. And it's something that, I don't know, he just kind of falls into a pattern and it feels comfortable to him. And he gets put on this assignment to kill Dracula. I think there are werewolves. I think that Anna and her brother, what's his name? Velkin yeah. or something?
Velkin.
Sexy boyfriend, Will Kemp.
Are actually both of it were already werewolves.
Okay.
And that's not known right away.
Uh-huh.
But maybe they're still part of this, like, family. I think I'd probably get rid of this weird nonsense about... I don't understand why that's even important.
I don't either.
It's enough of a motivation that Dracula's a thing and we need to
and
kill
you,
him.
Right, right. You don't need to have this whole story about your family's in purgatory unless yes. you kill him because your great-great-grandfather promised that he would kill him.
But I think what would be cool is to say, like, these are your local contacts. They mm-hmm. are known, like, monster hunters. And then he finds out that they are werewolves. And maybe he's killed a bunch of werewolves already.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what they tell him is that, like, this is not inherently bad.
Right.
We use it. It's a tool that we have chosen to use to fight Dracula
uh-huh.
or whatever. And there may be like other, maybe you could have Frankenstein's monster in there. Sure. If you want. But again, just as a sign that, like, the agency that he works for is like all monsters bad,
uh-huh.
but it's like not all monsters bad.
Hashtag not all monsters.
Yeah. Hashtag not all monsters. Bad monsters, bad. Yeah. Bad monsters. And that's like sort of part of the lesson that he has to learn.
I love if that was like on their group's crest written in Latin, bad monster, bad.
Bad monster, bad. And so like it's him trying to kill Dracula and also maybe starting to like question all the teachings of this mm-hmm. agency. And wondering, you know, what they know that maybe about him that he does, that they've kept from him maybe, or why he's doing this for him or what, how he got there in the first place. And just tease out maybe a future story and
yeah.
end it where it's like, he's technically still like, he probably goes and like tries to keep a secret of that. Like he doesn't tell them that like, oh, Anna's a werewolf. I think
yeah.
Anna lives, but the brother dies or something. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of is left like. I'm going to leave. I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to say we killed a vampire together. I'm not going to say that you were werewolves.
Yeah.
But now I have to go back and maybe keep one eye open
uh-huh.
because I don't maybe trust these guys anymore. Leave it at that.
That's actually interesting. I kind of like the idea also that you say that it's sort of teeing something up because the one thing that I kind of thought about this movie is that so many of these potential franchise starters end with the idea that, like, can't wait to see these guys team up again. This one ends with, like, well, two people are left and Frankenstein's
dead.
On a boat going somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't end with them all being like...
Buddies.
Yeah, being like, hey, if there's ever a problem, you give me a call sometime. It just ends with... most of them dead, and two guys go
yeah.
off on an adventure.
I also don't think there's no romance. It's just that they work with...
Yeah.
He works with these people, and
yeah.
it's like, Anna ends up being the person that helps unlock this idea that, like, it's not... You've been taught a very narrow worldview,
yeah.
and I have a different one to offer
yes.
you.
I like
anyway,
that.
That's me.
Mine's very simple, and I'm just going to sum it up like this.
Set fire to the movie.
Gonna just and then walk away from it. No,
it explodes behind you.
I think you can keep a lot about this movie, at least a lot of the dumb shit we don't like in it, if you basically make this like Jumanji. And this is a 2004 video game that a bunch of kids are playing. Let's say
so
like
you're saying
two or three of them.
The new Jumanji.
Yeah, it's Jumanji.
Yes.
Welcome to the Jungle.
Yes, exactly. They somehow got sucked into that, and I would love like. What, I'm, like, running around with my tits out in high heels? What, another vampire baby sequence? What, another carriage chase? What, and, like, now we're at a masquerade ball? What the fuck? Wow, this, like, Frankenstein sure looks like shit. Like, I just feel like it would then... It leaves it open to kind of then almost make fun of this kind of thing and to poke fun at it. And to sort of send up those tropes instead of just trying to play them so seriously a viewer is just, like, taken by it. Maybe this worked, you know, in 2004 when it came out. I guess not.
It didn't, because, audiences said no,
it did not.
But it especially just plays as incredibly boneheaded now, and
yeah.
I think it's a way that you can almost keep a lot of it in there, but just make it funny, so... Last thing, I guess, would you recommend this movie?
No!
I saw this movie in theaters...
The first time I saw this was the first time I watched it for this podcast. I had never felt the slightest inclination to see before, and my gut instinct proved me right.
Up until then, you had dodged a bullet.
Yeah, I know, right? A silver bullet.
And then when we saw another bullet coming, we're like, we're going to drag it.
We jumped right in front of it, baby. Yeah, no, this is a bad movie. It's too long. There's almost, like, nothing to recommend about this movie.
Honestly, unless you're watching this specifically to see how bad it is, I don't see what's in here for anyone.
Or to see Will Kemp in Little Rip Pants.
Yeah.
Anywho, so that, as they say, is Van Helsing.
As they say is that. Summer's over, baby.
Summer's over. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the beginning of fall and a mini-episode. Check us out at facebook.com/whywatchpod.
No.
No?
Just whywatch.
How many years has it been? Not enough, apparently.
Yeah. Need another 100. Yeah. And then drappack.com.
There it is. You got it, baby.
Yeah.
That's it.
Leave us a 5-star review on
Apple Podcasts, what have you, Amazon, whatever you listen to.
Otherwise.
See you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks. We're going to buy it out.
Bye. Love you, Will Captain.